Welcome to Facing Fear with Sarah. My name is Sarah McInerney Hawk. I am your host. I went from 30 flirty and thriving to 30 flirty and surviving. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 30, and prior to that, I had faced a lot of fears in life, which led me to creating this podcast in 2019. Fast forward, here we are many years later, and I've interviewed over 100 different guests with many stories of how they face fear while remaining unapologetically authentic. That is what we are here to do, encourage you to live your life unapologetically and authentically. The Facing Fear world recently got a little bit bigger because a new part of it is in the world, and that's my book, my very first book. It's called Does Carcinoma Mean Cancer? It covers the 4 days between being tested for cancer and finding out that I had it, and the funny things that happened in between. Well, you know, funny, happy, sad, etc. It can be found anywhere on Amazon, and it's a graphic memoir, which means it is 70% art, 30% text, and it's 74 pages long. So it's something you could read in one sitting, revisit multiple times because the art has a lot of dual meanings, and I'm so proud of it. Go check it out on Amazon or facingfearwithsarah.com/book. All right, let's get into this week's episode. What's up, my wonderful listeners? Happy Monday and welcome back to the Facing Fear podcast, a show that talks about facing fear with your host, me, Sarah McInerney Hawk, where I talk to individuals who have stared down their fears and are living what I like to call unapologetic, authentic lives and defining success on their own terms. On this show, you can expect vulnerability from myself and the guests and realistic tools of how you can face fear in your life. Today's episode is with a running and podcasting legend. Lindsay Hine is the host of I'll Have Another, a podcast which was one of the first podcasts I ever listened to. And it was one of the first that I heard of that wasn't supported by millions of dollars, a major news network, or a massive celebrity. Lindsay's show was introduced to me in 2015, and it really gave me a peek into making my dreams into a reality, because that is what Lindsay did. After being unable to find a podcast about running that interested her, Lindsay started her own. 6 years later, her show has over 270 episodes. She's interviewed everyone from local running stars to Olympians and has 3 million downloads and counting. And this is her full-time job now, so talk about goals. Not only does she talk the talk, she walks the walk, or I guess I could say runs the run. She's done 14 marathons, a half Ironwoman, and is a running coach for anyone looking to achieve anything from a 5K to an ultra marathon. We talk about facing fear in three topics. The first, facing the fear of running a virtual race, which will be me next month as I run my first ever marathon. The fear of health, because nobody's health is perfect, and Lindsay got tested and found out years ago that she was BRCA2 gene mutation positive, which is a pretty scary thing to find out, and she'll get more into that during the show. And finally, how she's conquered the hurdles and the fear to take her side hustle to a full-time passion. Finally, I would love for you to stick around until the end where I'll share how I'm facing my fear as I've been training for this marathon that I have coming up next month since February. Fear has been a large part of my athletic journey. As always, this episode is brought to you by two of my favorite tools, the Little Viper and the MPAC. So since we're talking about running, I want to talk about one of my favorite tools to take with me every single time I go on a run, and that's the Little Viper. It's a discreet pepper spray that's about the size of your average Fitbit tracker. So it's very small, but it also very useful. It provides a sense of peace knowing that when I go out at these dark mornings or sometimes late at night, because that's just when I have to get my running in, I have a way of protecting myself if needed. And this is only a $20 investment, you guys. This is absolutely worth it. So whether you like to run or walk or hike or walk your baby or whatever it is, you need to have a way to protect yourself. So go visit littleviper.com and use code SARAHMC for 10% off. Something else that has gotten me to this far in my journey is the MPAC. I mean, what a lifesaver during quarantine and COVID 2020, because the MPAC serves as a barbell, kettlebell, dumbbell, and a weighted backpack. We've all made our own gyms at home by now, and the MPAC is my only tool. I rarely use dumbbells. I don't own a barbell, that's for damn sure. I don't have any room for that in this apartment, because the MPAC does it all. It's the world's first and only weight training backpack using water as weight. That's the game changer right there, because most of these backpacks use sand or something else, and that is just not, it's not easy to use. You can't travel with it, so the MPAC is where it's at. So go check this out. There are workouts, videos, and more on my social media about how to use the MPAC, but more importantly, visit evolvedmotion.com/SarahMack. That's SARAMAC, and enter code EMPOWER for 10% off yours. All right, now that I've given you an intro, two of my favorite athletic tools, let's get into this episode all about running, fear, and overcoming the hurdles in front of you. Welcome to the Facing Fear podcast. This is definitely a surreal moment for me because your show was actually one of the first podcasts I ever listen to. In 2015, little backstory, I spent some time working in the Finish Line Distribution Center, and they used to let the employees wear headphones because you're kind of just doing like tedious solo projects throughout the day. And of course, Serial was my first podcast listen ever. But then I remember telling Marty about it, and he was like, hey, I know someone who's an actual podcaster, which to me was like, whoa, holy cow, like the real human does this. It's not just people with like massive budgets and a whole team and, you know, this amazing news network. And so he was like, yeah, my friend Lindsay, she has a podcast called I'll Have Another. So definitely one of my first listens, one of my first introductions into the podcasting world. And I'm very honored to have you on the show because I've been, you know, kind of following from afar for a while and far before my podcast dreams were a reality. So welcome, and I'll let you do a brief introduction of yourself.
Yeah, well, shout out to Marty for spreading the good word. I mean, you can't get more organic than that. I always say like word of mouth is the best way for your podcast to get out there, but you can't force people to share about it, you know? So I'm super grateful that Marty shared that with you because how would you have found it otherwise? Yeah, I live here in Indianapolis, and I have four little boys, 8 and under, and I'm married to my husband, Glenn, for 12 years. We live in Midtown in between downtown and Broad Ripple. I've been podcasting for 4 years and have kind of slowly taken it from a hobby to a job. And yeah, just kind of living here in Indy. We love to run. I love to read and just spend time with our neighbors and our friends.
Awesome. Well, thank you. So after learning more about you, I'd like to break this down into three categories of facing fear. So the first being long distance running, because she's a huge runner, and that's something I'm currently working towards. And I think for anybody to go beyond a 5K is kind of mind blowing. The second category being health and the hurdles that you've faced there. And then the third, selfishly for me, and because it's just, you know, entirely badass, as you've mentioned, you've conquered your fear and turned podcasting into a full-time job, aka a massive dream of mine. So if that sounds good for you, we'll get into it.
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. Awesome. Lindsay's been a runner for 20 years, including 16 marathons, 2 Boston marathons, and a half iron woman finisher.
I love that you said a woman.
Yes, I literally in my notes wrote woman in all caps.
I love it.
Something I've learned while training is one of the most humbling and equalizing factors about running, unlike any other sport, is everyone, literally everyone, starts at zero. Mm-hmm. Every time you start a run, every time you start a race or casual jog, you have to start at zero. So for my listeners who might be interested in taking their running game from mild zero to a little bit more serious, how would you encourage them to face fear and start adding up those miles?
A lot of times people don't make it past 2 miles, 3 miles, because once you're running for a while, once you get to that 2, 3, 4 miles, that's when a lot of times your body starts kind of clicking and you get into a rhythm. No matter how experienced I am, no matter how experienced anyone is, the first like mile is always hard. It's always your body's waking up. So my biggest suggestion to newer runners, people who just want to try for the first time, is to do a run walk. And I think you should start and go walk 5 minutes and then run for 30 seconds. Walk 1 minute, run for 30 seconds. And you can toy with those intervals a little bit, like how far, how long you run, how long you walk. But if you go out and try to run, I'm going to run 20 minutes nonstop and you've never run, that's going to be really challenging and you're going to hate your life and you're going to think, why does anybody do this to themselves? That was miserable. And in fact, I'm actually coming off an injury myself. And so I'm doing a run walk. So, you're never too experienced to have to go back to that run walk. I mean, postpartum after having babies, I've always started with a run walk. So, and my other advice is to start small goals. So maybe your first goal is 10 minutes and you walk for 1 minute and you run for 30 seconds for literally 10 minutes. And then if you feel good, just continue walking for a little bit more. And then my other big piece of advice there is consistency. So don't just do it once a week. Decide Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm going to go out for my run and kind of have a plan in place so you kind of know what I'm checking off for the day. So those are my piece of advice for just getting started.
How have you made running fun over the years? Because as I'm training for a marathon right now, a lot of people are asking me, aren't you so bored? Isn't it boring? And I feel like it's this weird thing where eventually, like, you don't actually need the music or the podcasting, but when you start, how have you made running fun for you or for your clients? Because I know you're a coach as well.
Yeah. Well, are you bored?
Shockingly, no, I haven't. And I just feel like I've gotten to that cool point that like every runner wants to get to where at the beginning, I would have to have a specific playlist, specific songs, non-negotiable, has to be working.
Yeah.
And now I can listen to almost anything, which is mind-blowing to me. And yeah, I'm not bored, but I don't have a great explanation for why not.
Like longer runs, I like to do start with a podcast and then finish with music or something like that. Like warm up with a podcast and then get some music on. It definitely feels more motivating though to get out there if you know you have a good playlist. That feels so great. Well, in regards to that, I recommend using like Aftershocks headphones or like Bone Conductor headphones so that you can hear what's going on around you while you run, because it's super dangerous if you can't hear what's going on. So if you are going to listen to headphones outside on your run, I would definitely recommend those because you can hear what you're listening to, but you can also hear cars driving by. And if someone were to like run up on you, you can hear like the leaves rustling around and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that one piece of advice for making it less boring is to break it up into segments. So a lot of times I'll say, okay, I'm going to go north 2 miles and then I know I'm going to go around the bend here, like go around the river for a couple miles. And so I kind of have the run broken up into sections. I think that really helps break a run down. But always running with friends is like huge because you run 7 miles with a friend and you're like, where did the time go? And I highly recommend most of your runs to be easy runs. And so that means you should be able to hold a conversation and talk to the person that you're running next to. If you can't hold the conversation, I recommend pulling it back a little bit and slowing down, because if you're running hard enough that you're breathing really heavy and it hurts on every single run, you're not going to be able to run fast on days where you're meant to run fast or meant to have a speed session. And you want to make sure that your body is rested for those harder effort days. So most runs should be easy and feel like a break from the world, a break from life and anything crazy going on, and just give your mind some space to just breathe, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I love those tips. So we've got get on a good playlist that you like and you look forward to. Being safe. I love your point about being safe. I'm a brand ambassador for a product called The Little Viper, and it's a wearable pepper spray, and I always take it with me
because you
never know. And then finally, going at your own pace. It's your own race. Don't compare yourself. If that's a 10-minute pace for you, Great. That's awesome. If it's a 7:30, fantastic. But I think that's a great point too, because people get intimidated by seeing other people's paces and I'm not going fast enough, but your lungs are different from the next to the next to the next. So I love that encouragement. So thank you for sharing that. So with almost every major race in 2020 canceled this year due to COVID and crowd control, it's the year of virtual races. And so for my listeners who may not know, a virtual race is where you run by yourself, record your time, you turn in those results, and then your medal and all of your race goodies get mailed to you later. Virtual racing is actually a big fear of mine this year because I've had my eyes set on a marathon for a few years. And in late 2019, I was like, all right, 2020 is the year, non-negotiable. And this is the cards we've been dealt. So, you know, there won't be any packet pickup. There won't be the corrals, the snacks, the packed course, the goofy signs. I will miss all of that so much, but I'm committed to this goal. For anyone out there doubting whether or not that they should bow out of their virtual race experience, what's your advice to continue carrying forward?
My first thought is, if you want to do it, do it. If you don't want to do it, don't feel like you have to. So a marathon, for instance, like that's a big undertaking, and especially your first marathon. So I would suggest gathering up friends and people that you know who would be interested in supporting you and kind of saying like, hey, do you think you could go out to mile 10 or you could go out to mile 16 and make it feel like a race to you. I think you should make it a big deal, like race morning, you know, like lay your clothes out, do all the things that you need to do, hydrate. And, you know, I know with COVID, it's kind of weird and it depends on where you live. But like, if there are a couple of people that would be interested in doing it with you, you could even start at the same time, even if your paces aren't the same, and have the same finish area so that, you know, say you finish in 4 hours and they finish in 4.5 hours, you can at least like cheer each other on at the finish. Plan for a celebration at the end, like do all the things that you would do to celebrate it as if it were happening. And there's a lot of accountability in social media too. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. You know, sometimes social media can be frustrating and we talk about the comparison thing and it's everybody's highlight reel, but sometimes it can be a really good source of accountability and you'll find people that are really, truly cheering you on and excited to see you finish your first marathon. So I would say find those people. And, you know, most of my best friends, they're not runners. They don't care that I run a marathon, you know, like, cool, you're going to run a marathon. I do think, though, since it's your first marathon, your friends will get excited, even if they're not runners, and get out there to support you. So, I'd say look for community wherever that may be to help support you. And whether that's a 5K, 10K, half or full marathon, whatever you're doing, find a community to talk to, you know. There's Facebook groups, there's places where you can go where other people are training for things.
Yeah, so it'll be an interesting experience, but I've made it this far and I feel like I'm going to be a one and done marathoner, so it's got to be this year.
Until in like 3 years, however long it is before majors come back and you're like, I have to run Chicago or Boston and get that experience.
Chicago was my first dream one to do, but then we were supposed to go on a honeymoon. So then I was like, okay, I'll do Monumental, but now none of those things are happening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. We had a little quarantine wedding in May. I'm curious, what is your favorite part of race day or the racing experience in general?
Finishing. The start is always a little nerve-wracking because, you know, you feel great, but you don't know that you're going to feel great in 5 miles or however long it is. But just the knowing what that satisfaction of finishing feels like, I think that just those feelings of accomplishment, like there's nothing that beats it. And then you're just flying high after a marathon for a couple weeks for me. But I think that's what it would be, that satisfaction and just pushing your body to the limits. It feels really good to push your body. In the moment it hurts, but, it just feels good to know you can do it.
Agreed. I've never felt prouder than finishing a half marathon or some of my longer races. So I'm excited for that. I think my favorite part of the actual race day is the corral. Like, it is so fascinating being around so many different people, different body types. I think running is so cool because it can be the ultimate equalizer. Anybody can go do it. So one part of your career Marty definitely wanted me to ask about was when you worked with Back on My Feet, which I'm also really interested in because it intersects two things that I've spent time engaging with this summer, which is running and then also the homeless population here in Indianapolis. Thanks to working from home, I've actually been volunteering for Outreach Inc. once a week and delivering food to homeless youth around the city. So I thought it was really cool that Back on My Feet intersects both of those. So can you tell us a little bit about that role that you had and why it was impactful to you?
Yes. So, okay. So I worked for the John H. Bonner Community Center on the Near East Side. That was my first job out of college. And while I worked there, I made a connection with a woman named Andrea Demink. So she's the founder of The Poor House, and they are an outreach community for people experiencing homelessness as well. And so I would volunteer at some of their events. I would help with certain things that they did. They would have this big event every November where they handed out lots of clothes and soap and just commodities, things that people needed. And I would always volunteer at that event. And I remember talking to Andrea, and I said one day, I said, I wish I could somehow combine these two passions for community and helping those in my city and running. And that's when I heard about Back on My Feet. So at the time, the only position open was the executive director position, which I was highly unqualified for. But I applied anyway because I really wanted to work for them. I knew I wasn't qualified, but I thought, well, I'll just do it, you know?
That's awesome. Good for you.
It's kind of, you know, you go into those things like kind of embarrassed because you're like, I know I have no place here. But the cool thing was, and now looking back, I'm telling the story, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it would have been so silly not to go apply. During my interview, the woman who interviewed me, her name was Sandy, she said, you know what? We haven't posted this position yet, but I think you would be a really good fit for our communications director position. And I'm like, yes, please, anything. So I got that. I took that job. And so it was a really cool time to take that job, too, because I didn't have any kids yet. There was a lot of weird time commitments and things like that. It made sense for my life at that moment. I think that programs like Back on My Feet just really show you what the power of running can do and how it can change somebody's life. And beyond the running, Back on My Feet really focuses on the relationships and the community. They connect people with jobs. But the key there is that they expect you to show up 3 days a week at 5:30 in the morning and do your run with your team. And you have to be accountable with that before they're going to start recommending you for jobs and placing you for interviews and things like that. So it's a really, really cool program. You know, you're using running to move your life forward in so many more ways than just actually physically running.
Well, I'm glad I asked you about that because what an amazing story of how you even got there in the first place.
Yeah.
And something with facing fear I'm always talking about is just saying yes and figuring it out later or applying for something because maybe there's a chance. So I love that you did that and it ended up being this incredible world that you got to be a part of. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's funny looking back now. I'm like, I don't think I realized how ballsy it was to just apply for the executive director.
Right. That's awesome. Feel the fear and do it anyway because
that's right.
You never know what could come out of that. So that's amazing. Thank you for sharing. Let's jump into the second category that kind of goes right along with running and athletics, and that is facing the fear of health because no one's health is ever perfect. And so something you had shared in our pre-interview was that while you were training, you found out that you had the BRCA2 gene mutation, which puts individuals at high risk for breast cancer and ovarian cancer. So can you tell us more about finding out about that and then what journey that took you on?
Yes. So my grandma had a breast and ovarian cancer, and she had breast cancer in her 40s. Caught it super late, like stage 4, not hopeful that she would, you know, it didn't look great. She ended up surviving, I think, by a miracle. And then 25 years later, she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So at that point, they tested her for the BRCA mutation. There's 1 and 2. There's 2 mutations. And basically what that is everybody has that gene. If you have it mutated, you don't have protection against breast cancer like someone who isn't mutated in that gene. So, and actually a very small percentage of people who get breast cancer are BRCA positive. If you're BRCA positive, your chances of getting it are very high, but there are so many other factors. So we found out she was positive, and my mom got tested, and her sisters got tested, and then I got tested, and my sisters got tested, and I was positive because my mom was positive. My son was like 1 year old at the time, and I was training for my half Ironman. And this was back in the day. I remember like I was super active on Twitter. I don't even remember if Instagram was a thing. But I remember the specific moment sitting on the bike, stationary bike at LA Fitness. I used to go there, reading about Angelina Jolie finding out she was BRCA positive. And I was always like kind of hiding from it a little bit. Like I had known for a couple years that my grandma was positive. But I just, and then my mom was, I waited like 2 years after my mom found out because I like didn't want to think about it. And I remember I was like, damn it, Angelina Jolie, why do you have to like put this out everywhere? Because now I'm seeing it in all the magazines and all the news. And I'm like, shoot, I feel like I have to get tested. So props to her because she probably saved a lot of lives, honestly. You know, thinking about it on the bike. And then another day I was swimming laps in the pool because I'm training for a half Ironman, Iron Woman. And I just got out of the pool and I was like, you need to call the doctor right now because you like feel good and you know, you finish a swim or a bike or a run or whatever it is. And you feel kind of invincible, like, okay, I can handle this. I can do this. So I called and made my appointment. And then, you know, once the appointment was made, I found out. And when my doctor called, it was my doctor. And so I kind of knew that she was going to tell me it was positive. Cause if it was the nurse or if they sent something in the mail, or I don't think they do that anymore, but it wouldn't have been my doctor. She wouldn't have bothered to call if it was negative. So we talked about it and I just decided for me, the percentage chance of me getting breast cancer in my lifetime was 86%. And I had just finished breastfeeding my son and I constantly like feeling for lumps. And when you're breastfeeding, your boobs feel all weird. And I was just constantly obsessing over it. And so I was just that, I need to take care of this because otherwise I'm going to live in fear for the next like 5-10 years, however long until I do it. And I knew we wanted more babies. So that was a factor because, you know, it eliminates your opportunity to breastfeed. But I just felt like it was the best decision for our family. So I had a prophylactic double mastectomy in October of 2013, reconstruction in January. And now, I get my ovaries checked every 6 months. I get an ultrasound and I get my blood work done to monitor everything. Now that we're done having babies, I will probably, get a hysterectomy. Ugh, I don't even want to say it in the next like 2-3 years. I kind of made 40 my number and I'm just turned 37. So yeah, I mean, it's not fun. I don't like it. I don't like going to get my ovaries checked every 6 months. Every time I get nervous and I think, okay, you know, like, what if they tell right. me something? But like life goes on and it's going to keep moving forward whether I get them checked or not. And I know that's the smart thing to do. So I definitely feel like when I had my mastectomy, when I made that decision, it was a huge life-altering moment just as far as how I walked through fear and walked through facing health-related issues. Because I would, in your head, you want to ignore things because you're just like, oh, I don't want this to be true, you know, but you kind of have to just face it. So I think that training for that half Ironman really was an integral part in overcoming and like handling it because I had something else I was feeling.
Thank you for sharing that. And it's a perfect example of facing a whole different type of fear. You know, we've moved from running to health and it is scary to go find out those things, but the not knowing I think would eventually have just eaten you alive. So I think it's brave that you went and did that and now you can prevent it. And like you said, it's not fun. I don't want to go every 6 months. That's pretty frequent.
Which is good because then it's like the window of
is smaller
from like if numbers are good to they're not good. It's like such a small time frame for things to get out of control because ovarian cancer is like a pretty intense cancer to get. A lot of times it's because it's caught pretty late. So that's why they're so diligent about that every 6 months.
I think sometimes when our plans get deterred, you know, like the virtual running or an injury or something like that, we just let it be an excuse to just pull all the stops out. So you kept going and kept training. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And it was actually pretty cool because I had to get a mammogram and an MRI and get everything looked at after I found out I was positive. And so I did the race in July and I had my surgery in October. So I was getting all the tests done. And I found out the day before the Ironman that everything looked good. I remember like being at the expo and like waiting for the doctor to call. And finally they called at like 4 p.m. or something. And they were like, everything looks great. So it was kind of cool because then I went into that race with so much freedom. Like, okay, this is off my chest. I've made the decision. I'm having the surgery, but I know everything looks good right now. And it's crazy because two instances that earlier that spring in March, I had run a marathon and I had ran next to a woman who was my age who was a breast cancer survivor. She was like, thankfully, I'm not positive for BRCA or any of the gene stuff they can run tests on yet. And I was just like, ah. And then that morning of the race, we were standing in the sand, like getting ready to go into the water. And they were sharing about a woman who was in the race, who was like a three-time breast cancer survivor, who was young. And so in my, it's just like kind of all kind of coming together and the kind of thing where maybe on a normal day, I would think, oh man, that woman is a badass, but it just felt really like personal to me in that moment.
Right. I think that was definitely the universe looking out for you for sure. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Let's bring this full circle and tie these two worlds of running and podcasting together. So tell us about your show and why you started it.
Yeah, so my show is called I'll Have Another with Lindsay Hine, and I interview mostly professional runners now. I interview everyday runners as well, but it's kind of turned into more professional runners. And I started the show because I was trying to fill a need that I was looking for. I couldn't find a show that talked about running that I enjoyed listening to. It's kind of evolved over the years. You know, I still incorporate pieces of my own life into the show and, you know, share little side stories here and there. But I think it's turned more into me interviewing the person rather than the casual conversation. It's still pretty casual, though. But 2016 podcasts weren't so popular as they are now. So there was a huge learning curve. I think there's a lot more resources out there now. If you look back to my first like 100 episodes, my audio is pretty crappy. I just was pretty reckless about what I was doing. like, oh, it'll be fine, you know, which is exciting to me at the same time, because I had some pretty loyal listeners that have stuck with me through the years. So it's pretty cool to.
That is a good point.
You know, like they could have been like, I really like her show, but that audio sucks. I'm not coming back. And I'm sure there were some people that did. But yeah, it's turned into my job. And I have since started a network called Sandy Boy Productions. We have another podcast in the network that I co-host called the Illuminate Podcast. And then there's another podcast in the network called the Up and Running Podcast that's hosted by Lauren Flores and Abby Stanley. So I'm expanding the network slowly but surely. I kind of felt like that was the next step business-wise in podcasting. You know, that's just one of those things where I don't know what I'm doing. I just said I was going to start a network and I got a website and here we are.
That's awesome. And you're more than 270 episodes in on the I'll Have Another podcast. So can you tell us about a favorite episode or interview or moment from building those 200 and plus episodes?
It's funny because my husband, I'll get off an interview and I'll say that was like one of my favorite episodes. It's like a top 10. And he'll always say, that was recency bias. You don't know that. Because there's so many good ones in there. I think one that surprised me was Jenny Simpson. I don't get nervous really anymore, but I was a little bit nervous because she doesn't do a ton of media as far as podcast interviews and things like that. And if you watch her compete, she's very serious and I just thought, is she going to be so serious and, you know, hard to interview? But she was so fun and we connected so well. I felt like she was a good friend. I mean, most recently, you mentioned before we got on that you listened to Christian Taylor. I thought he was amazing. Just so passionate about his, not just his career, but what he's doing with the Athletics Association. When a guest can really open up and let it go where it just feels right to go, it makes for a really special conversation. Tiana Bartoletta, that was a recent episode. She was amazing. And then if we're going to go down to all-time favorites, I mean, I think that probably the Dina Cast, the first time I interviewed Dina Caster was just an amazing episode. She's such an awesome person and speaks such words of wisdom with so much positivity in the lives of so many people. And she's really good at it too. So yeah, I think that those would be some of my favorites.
I have the same problem. A lot of times after I do an interview or the episode comes out, I'm like, this is the best one yet. This is my favorite. Yep. And it's like all these little chapters of what I feel like is almost a book. Mm-hmm. And I love every little chapter for like a different reason. It's like all my little children. But
well, I love that you say
it's
that.
It's pretty special to be on the side of the mic, you know?
Well, I don't know if you – do you ever listen to – and I haven't in a long time, but Tim Ferriss?
I haven't in a long time either.
But you know who he is.
Yeah.
You wrote that book, Tools of Titans, from his interviews with all of his guests. And I have this, like, whenever I go out on runs or bike rides, I'm like, I should do something like that. There's so many amazing things that have been said in these conversations. But then I think that sounds like a really big undertaking.
You'd have to go back and listen to every single one of your episodes.
Yeah, and decide, like, what's the lesson from each episode? And maybe you pick your top 20 favorites or something like that. But what is the tangible life lesson and make it into a little book? I feel like that could be really cool. But
I think so too. And writing a book is definitely some ambitions that I have one day as well. And I think these conversations definitely help me build, you know, my perspective and different perspectives on facing fear. So I feel that as well.
That's awesome. And even talking about it encourages you to do it, you know, like
definitely
you get excited when the words even come out of your mouth. You get excited about the potential.
Definitely. I believe that, hold on, let me see which question I want to ask because we're kind of running down to time. So, okay, this is what I want to ask. So I know through following you and to listening to you on other podcasts, you've been really open and vulnerable and sharing moments that aren't so perfect about making this side hustle into a full-time gig. So can you share a major moment of facing fear and all that you've done since starting your podcast?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many nights where I was up super late trying to figure this out and, just trying to do it in between nap times and things like, you know, just things like that, where I look back now, I have more childcare now. And I'm like, I can't believe I did all that with so little childcare. So I think that was probably a huge one for me, is like really launching this business when I had little kids at home. Because the hard part is that you're not making any money, you know, when you start. And so for me to justify paying for childcare, I felt really guilty because it was my hobby and I had dreams. Like I felt like I could make it into a job and make some money. But I had this like overwhelming sense of guilt to put them in childcare and pay for that when I'm just, you know, going forward with not making any money. So I think that probably was huge for me. And I think back to how hard I worked through those years when they were so little. And I'm really proud of that I stuck with it. And it feels really good now to have my two little ones are in childcare full time. Because at some point you have to bite the bullet and do that because you can only move forward so much if you're being pulled in so many different directions. And I think it's a really common phrase that people like to say that balance is BS. And I think in certain moments that probably is. I think for a lot of us, we can probably find it, though, if we make decisions that, you know, like not watching so much TV and things like that. Like we can find that balance if we want to. I know that's not realistic for, say, a single mom who's working crazy hours and, you know, has to do all the things. So I certainly know that's not the case for everybody. But for me, I think it's possible. And one of the ways in my life right now I'm making that possible is I made the decision to put my two youngest kids into daycare full time so that I could keep on my job with the podcast and facilitate e-learning. I just like can't do all of it, even if right. the little boys are home 2 days a week. So that's kind of a roundabout way of saying that that was probably one of my biggest hurdles, was figuring all this out with little kids. I'd say another hurdle, I remember I could say I started doing these live shows in New York City. And the first one I ever did, I just asked for it. Like I interviewed a woman that was part of the New York Roadrunners, and I just told her on the interview that I wanted to come do live shows with them. And so like something like that was a hurdle because I just like paid my way out there. Like I didn't get paid to do that show. I just was like, I'm going to do this and prove that I can do this. So that hopefully they'll have me back and I can eventually get paid to do these shows like this. And I think that those kind of experiences are the hurdles that sometimes it's hard to be willing to do, because it's scary to drop a bunch of money on something that you don't know is going to end up being a successful thing. But if you don't do it, you'll never know. So, that would be an example, I think, of kind of just taking a little bit of a risk and, you know, leaving my family for a couple days and saying, I'm going to go do this. I know it's not huge, but looking back, I feel like that was a sacrifice and I kind of rolled the dice and here we are.
Yeah. A big part of my building this Facing Fear community is to pull people out of isolation who feel like they're facing a fear alone. And you just nailed like three of my fears with my building the podcast, because I feel that same guilt of dumping money into something that mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to succeed, but I also share that same fear of if I don't try now, I will never know. So I really appreciate you sharing those with me, because those are some of my exact same fears. And I know that other podcasters listen to this show, but just entrepreneurs or people in general who want more time to maybe do something outside of their normal schedule. If you don't try, and a lot of times trying involves money that you may never get back,
totally.
You will never know. So those were awesome. Thanks. That was great.
You're welcome. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like such a common phrase, like you have to spend money to make money.
Yeah.
So true. And then the more money you make, the more you have to spend, because yep. then you have to like get a bigger server, you have to hire help. So like, I mean, it's just part of the game. And every time you spend more money on your business, it's like a little bit anxiety producing. But if you're going to move forward, you kind of have to make those leaps in that regard. But yeah, it's hard for sure.
Definitely. Well, let's wrap up here. Is there anything that I didn't ask or that you wanted to share or put into the universe?
I would say don't be complacent and give yourself the freedom to relax and find that balance. And so sometimes that means saying no to things you don't always want to say no to. And just take some deep breaths.
I like it. Good practices for everybody, no matter where you're at.
That's right.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with the wonderful and talented Lindsay Hine. She was definitely a dream guest for me this season, so I'm so pumped to have had that conversation with her. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, please review it right inside the Apple Podcast app. Give it 5 stars and tell me a little bit why you love the show, or maybe that episode with Lindsay in particular. If you're not an Apple user, you can easily leave a review on the Facing Fear Facebook page linked in the show notes. Each review is so helpful so I can continue making this show amazing for you. While you're at it, go check out Lindsay's podcast called I'll Have Another, available anywhere you listen to your favorite shows. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, I wanted to share how I'm facing the fear of running my first marathon. Because you guys, I truly cannot believe I'm at the point in my training where I'm at. If you plan ahead, ask for help, and find motivation within yourself, you can truly go for any goal, whether it's athletic or not. So as the host, I believe it's important for me to share how I'm facing fear with you because as we know, facing fear never goes away. So I'm on this journey with you. Let's face fear together. And by sharing my story, maybe you'll see a piece of yourself within it, which opens the door for further conversation because you know you can always reach me at hello@facingfear.com. hello@facingfearwithsarah.com, or maybe it motivates you by just letting you know that you're not alone if you don't want to reach out for further conversation. So let's start at the beginning. Since I was a kid, I was not meant to be a runner. I grew up with asthma and still have it to this day. I'm one of those rare adults who has never outgrown it. In fact, the first time I ever got high was about 5 or 6 years old when I got my first inhaler and was taught how to properly use it by my doctor. Well, I was a kid, so I took that little blue guy home and found out that I liked the taste of the medicine and puffed away. Well, here's how that turned out. I remember sitting on the edge of the bed while the room was spinning with my parents on either side of me lecturing me about why I should not have done that. And while it's funny now, I'm sure they were not thrilled when their daughter just got prescribed this new medicine and had wasted half of it simply because she liked the taste. So my breathing has never been on par. In seventh grade, my health took a dramatic deep dive when I got pneumonia that quickly turned south when my lungs started to fill with liquid. I know, gross, sorry. I had 2 chest tubes put into my side, and I spent 3 very long weeks at a hospital in Chicago. Fun side story, not so fun, but side story. On the ambulance ride to Chicago, we got a flat tire and had to wait under a highway bridge for a new ambulance to pick us up. This was sometime either late at night or very early in the morning because it was dark. I was so out of it, I didn't really care what was going on, but my poor mother, who was not only awoken by me in the middle of the night for this emergency and who was already freaked out about her child's health, now panicked as cars raced by our broken ambulance on the side of the highway. Oh, mom, you really have been through some shit being my mom. At 18 years old, I tore my right ACL and meniscus. I had surgery a few months later, and thanks to being a college athlete at the time, I was under the best care and recovered almost perfectly. Welp, 6 years later, I did the same exact injury again. Same knee, same ACL, and meniscus. Busted. This time around, I was 25 years old, working a full-time job, unable to commit hours upon hours to recovery. This time around, the injury and long road to recovery drove me into a depression that really altered the path I was on prior to that. This surgery took me much longer to recover from than the first time, and I never thought I was going to go back to my athletic peak. Okay, so why am I telling you all these sad, negative, personal history of my well-being? Well, because I want to share this with you because I realize we often let our past dictate our future. Our personal history can act as a document of why we will never accomplish X, Y, or Z. Our minds love coming up with excuses or reasons why we just shouldn't try in the first place because we probably won't even succeed. So where did my long distance running journey start? I did my first half marathon in 2015 after being surrounded by coworkers who were super into running. One of my good friends, Jenna, and I took our training very seriously and completed the half that spring. I felt so damn proud and knew I would do more. Since then, I've done about 4 more, but then came my second ACL surgery. After that recovery, I had to train for an entire year to get myself back up to 13.1 miles. It was rough. I have always had 26.2 on my bucket list. It's one of those things that if I don't at least try for this goal, I know I will die regretting it. After my second surgery, I thought this would be impossible. I'm 4 years out of surgery number 2, and my knee still isn't perfect, but it has come a hell of a way since the beginning. After thinking and thinking and thinking about it, I decided in fall 2019, okay,
2020 is the year. I set my sights on the monumental marathon that takes place here in Indianapolis on November 7th, 2020, giving myself almost 10 months to train since I started in February of this year. That was my first lesson in facing fear. If you're going for a big, big goal, give yourself time. There is no need to rush. If it really matters that much to you, you will enjoy the process, knowing that if you work your ass off, success will be there. Then I asked for help. If you read my last newsletter from September, I blogged about why it's so hard to ask for help. Quick plug here. If you aren't a newsletter subscriber, you can sign up at facingfearwithsarah.com to read more blogs like that one and get Facing Fear content once a month in a newsletter that's a bolt of inspiration. Okay, back to my story. Asking for help. I am so lucky that one of my coworkers turned very good friend, Scott Saucedo, is always down to coach me to whatever goal I have. He is a beast himself in every aspect of the word, so hanging around him makes it hard not to strive for the best version of yourself inside and out. So here's a second tip. Within asking for help, you have to ask for help in a way that works for you. I know myself well enough to know I needed accountability big time, and I needed it right in my face. You can go online and Google a marathon training program right now, follow it, and finish the race. But that's not what was going to do it for me. I needed someone breathing down my neck. So I reached out to a coach who I knew I could train with and see in person. Scott has been a freaking godsend for me this entire time. He's written every running workout for me for months and months and provided all the knowledge I've needed to make it this far. So ask for help in the way you need it. Now for the actual training. Here are a few items that have helped me survive. You have to invest in the tools that you need. At the most basic level, that's a good pair of running shoes. Mine are Saucony and they're a dream. Comfortable headphones with a good playlist and podcast lined up. A water bottle that you can carry, whether that's in your hand or on a belt. And of course, you never want to leave home without the little Viper, the wearable pepper spray to help you feel protected when you're on long runs alone. And all my runs have been alone, basically, besides like a handful. Now that I had my plan and all the tools I needed, it was time to actually do the running. I've followed Scott's programming to the T. Whether I felt like getting up and running or not, I've done my very best never to skip a day or workout. And I've done most of my training alone, which has actually worked well for my busy schedule. But if you need a training partner or group, they are out there. You just have to look. So after all that, the injuries, the preparing, the hoping, the dreaming, wishing for this goal, 2020 just had to be the year where everything went virtual. I love races for so many reasons. The corral, being surrounded by an extremely diverse group of people all going for the same goal at the crack of dawn, the cheerleaders, the signs, the snacks, and of course, the medal at the finish line. And I won't have any of that for my first marathon. Huge bummer. And this is where I face fear the most, I think. Because all of those things, while they are extras, are huge motivation and adrenaline rushes I crave on race day. How am I going to do when it's just me out there? How am I going to do when maybe I only have like two or three friends running with me? When I'm the only one who's going to finish 26.2 that day instead of hundreds of thousands of other people? I'm nervous, you guys. But I've come this far and damn it, I am going to finish. So here's how I'm setting up my race day. I'm going to start at a Monon trailhead. For those of you not local to Indy, it's our bike path, and run north and south, crossing my finish line over and over. So I'll run out three, come back, run out two, come back, run out five. I kind of do a pattern like that. This will work out well because since there's not an actual race, I can have a home base where friends can drive up, park, get out, run certain legs with me, and go home. I'm thinking I'll do my legs in sections, like I mentioned, to break them down mentally so I can think, okay, I just have to do six. Okay, it's just four. So I can make it a little bit easier on my mind. Since the race is not actually in person where it would have been a big, huge loop, I'm just going to use that to my advantage. If you're interested in running with me on November 7th, please let me know. I would love to have you come out and be a part of the crew. And if you're not into running, you are more than welcome to bike alongside me. I already have a few friends who are going to be biking, so no worries if you're not into running. I wanted to share all of that because I truly cannot believe that I'm at the point in my training where I'm at. Whether my race day goes fantastic or horribly, I really have enjoyed this process. And I cannot tell you guys, I don't understand how my normal life now is getting up and running 13 miles before 8 a.m. I can't believe it. But I wanted to share it with you because I want you to do things and to amaze yourself that you cannot believe you're doing. By facing fear, there is so much beauty on the other side, and that's where I'm at right now, and I hope it stays this way till race day, but until then, I'm just going to enjoy the process day by day. Do not let your past dictate what's possible for you in the future. You heard all the health reasons why I probably shouldn't be the athlete that I am today, but you just cannot let your past dictate what's possible for you in the future. If you're training for a virtual event, I'd love to hear how it's going or to see if I can help at all, or we can just chat or complain about not getting to be in a race corral on race day. Shoot me a DM at Facing Fear with Sarah or an email at hello@facingfearwithsarah.com. You made it to the end of the episode, so I'm going to give you a little surprise. I was recently published in the Wildfire magazine. It is the first and only publication for and by those who are too young to be affected by breast cancer. And you can go get this issue at a discount. So visit wildfirecommunity.org and use code WILDFIRE15, or even better, use the link in my social media, in the show notes today. And if you use that particular link and the code, you can not only save yourself money, but you can also earn me a little bit of money as I get a kickback from every purchase used under Sarah's link. So go check it out in the show notes. The issue is themed The New Normal, and this is relatable for anybody who's been through some kind of storm in life and is trying to figure out who they are and who and what and how and why life goes on afterwards. So check it out. Go visit wildfirecommunity.org. Use code WILDFIRE15 to save on your version of a print or digital copy of the latest issue called The New Normal. Thank you so, so much for your support.